Trini Lopez.
No, I think, well, there's a Trini Lopez reference in Seinfeld.
Did you know Trini Lopez was the entertainment at the first Fiesta Bowl?
No. Wow.
So I went to the Fiesta Bowl. Wow. Let me just tell you a couple of stories on that one. It was a big day for me. Didn't quite work out because this new girl moved to town, and I got Fiesta Bowl tickets. We went to the first Fiesta Bowl, and this is my memory. Trini Lopez.
Didn't go.
It's not about Arlene. Yes, real name.
Wow.
No, it didn't work. Trini Lopez comes out. I mean, week, even in the day, whenever that was, he wasn't in the day. I mean, he was always weak. And so he comes out. He was absolutely terrible. And remember, he had like, if I had a hammer, and if I had a hammer, I'd hammer in the morning.
Was that
terrible? Well, it wasn't his song, but he sang it. He had like some horrible pop version of that, and then a bunch of other crap like that. So he sang about, I promise you, no one in the stadium was listening to this guy, and it was packed.
Except
for
maybe your date. Yeah.
No, maybe she was.
So
he gets to the end, and he's right at the end. I think that might have been the last song, you know. I'd hammer out justice. And just as he gets to the end, Arizona State comes onto the field behind him. He doesn't see it. The crowd goes insane, right?
He's like, thank you,
my friends. Oh, I love
Phoenix. I'll be in Vegas next week.
I love Phoenix. Oh, I love you. He went on and on about how the overpouring of emotion.
Hope nobody ever told him.
No.
It'd be sad.
The other thing they did was, people from way back will remember, is they had this thing. This is our first big deal, you know, first bowl game.
Yeah.
And they had one of these hokey deals where they had a giant contraption of some sort. I don't know what it was supposed to be, of a vase or something, but it was gigantic. And inside were like 500 white doves. And at some point in time, when they ripped the top off it or something, these doves were going to fly out, and then they formed some formation, like a heart or some bullshit, and everybody would go, wow, that's awesome. And so they came to that part, and they built it up, and now here they go. Well, they had forgotten that even, you know, in Arizona, even then, it's still a little warm in the afternoon. The doves were inside there baking. And they were like, they were fine, but they were like asleep, half of them. And so, like, and now, here they come. Like five come out. They're flying around. Doesn't look right. They're beating on the side of the thing. Like five more come out. They would not come out. And the whole thing, they could not come out. They were well trusted.
Well, thank God they didn't.
That would have been a nice deal.
Right in the path of the airport. Captain Sullenberg.
Oh, it was 737. Oh, shoot.
Tempe Town.
Yeah, well, those days, it might have been.
Did you guys see the video of that guy in, I think it was Taiwan or someplace? They were doing like this ceremony, and they were all going to release the ceremonial dove, right? He was holding the dove a little too tightly, and it died in his hands. So he didn't
squeezed it. He was nervous. That could happen easy, yeah. Yeah, no, not good.
I worked with a magician years ago in San Jose. And he was the headliner. And by the end of the week, he figured out that he needed to do his act in two different 20-minute sections because he had doves hidden inside of his jacket. And one of them died the first night because by the time he got around
to too hot.
Yeah, he goes to pull out this.
Suffocated.
You know, a trick's not nearly as impressive.
Dead bird. With my dead bird trick.
Trying to do CPR on a dove.
That like is this. Hilarious.
Yes, yeah.
Well, anyway, those are our Fiesta Bowl. If you have any more Trini Lopez stories you want to send in, that's the only one I have. But hey, what about, we're here live at Marley's. And we have the lovely Carrie Dozer back from Hawaii.
Not to be confused with Danny Zalisco.
Yeah.
Hopefully not that I ever am.
I don't think anyone would ever confuse you with Danny.
Anyone confused on that?
No.
Okay.
We got that down.
Speaking of Danny, we appreciate him being on the show and all of his listeners to his Katie Gabe show on Sunday nights, him plugging us. And he really wants us to plug the Doors. So if you're listening to this prior to Thursday night, Doors and Phoenix Symphony are together at Dodge.
Wow.
Yes. And don't give me that look, Carrie, because I said the same thing. I thought the Doors were
dead.
Yeah. No.
Well, at least the important one.
Dead doorbell.
Right.
No. Dead as a doornail. No.
Dead as a dove.
Was Danny dead here in time to talk about Lady Gaga and Kanye West getting axed?
No.
Because I want to know why.
No, just
I'm not getting axed, but it was a show. They were going to go on
tour
together.
Yeah. That would have been a good
which
tour.
Would have been a great show.
I would have gone to that.
And I was I was watching CNN, and I saw a little crawler, and it didn't say anything why.
I think Kanye's in rehab
Kanye's,
right now.
Kanye's taking himself off the market for a while.
Yeah.
But Lady Gaga is still
going,
wild.
He would have just interrupted every one of her songs. I'm going to let you finish.
But first.
But Beyonce
had a better song.
I would rather be on tour with her.
And you heard the joke.
Like Lady Gaga.
He still didn't get it right. Kanye West announced the cancellation of the tour in the middle of a Taylor Swift song. You know, just
no, it didn't work right. So anyway, you missed all that.
That's too bad.
Yes, and Subdudes Thursday night Rhythm Room, be there.
Hmm.
Right, Rob Harris, you're going to be there, right? Okay, I don't know who else is in, but I'm in. So anyone who would like to go.
What time?
7:30. 7:30. You can see some of the gang if you want to show up at the Subdudes, who are very cool. And the Rhythm Room, I love that place.
It is very cool.
It is a nice place. But we might not, I don't know, but anyone had that barbecue outside there? That looks bad.
Mm-mm. That's something you have after you have a lot of beer.
I think you're right. Yeah, I always wondered how that survived.
Like the hot dogs.
I think if you're drunk as hell
really
you stumble out there
hammered.
And go, I'm hungry, and they go, hey, here's a barbecue.
Well, look at our luck.
Maybe it's good, but
at the time,
it's
like the best barbecue ever.
Ever.
If you're a ham.
Exactly.
What? Best
but
ever.
But going in, because barbecue, the problem I have with it, like that barbecue, is it gets on your hands, you stink, mm-hmm. you smell like barbecue,
mm-hmm.
and then you walk into the concert.
Dude.
No, that's bad.
Well, you don't want to eat before, because then you'll smell like the Rhythm Room.
Well, Grant, it's like when I lived back in Michigan.
Come on.
And, you know, down in Detroit, you go to the clubs and stuff like this, and there was a White Castle at Woodward and 8 Mile. And I swear, at 2:30, when the bars let out, the line was like a mile long.
Oh,
and everybody
needs a White Castle.
Oh, White Castles are the best.
Mm-hmm. You have to be drunk.
First time I had one in D.C., people were always
raving
about White Castle. Like, oh, great. I walked in, I ordered mine, and the lady opened a drawer and pulled out a couple burgers. That's not good.
No, you buy them by the bag.
Yeah,
bag.
I don't like them out of the drawer.
18 years ago, I woke up in Chicago in a hotel room, a little Fleabag hotel room right next to the Comedy Club, and on the other side of a White Castle.
Ooh.
I was naked, except for my dress shoes. I don't even know how you do that.
That's handy.
And a bag full of White Castles at the foot of the bed. And I'm like,
I didn't even
want to open it and start counting the wrappers because I knew I was direct to I was going to call an intervention on myself.
That's when you want a video of them. You just want to know what happened.
That's like
the hangover.
Run an autopsy on that evening.
Naked with your dress shoes on?
Yeah.
That's a David
how you do that.
That's a David Hasselhoff type moment.
The dress shoes is not good.
How long ago was this?
Last year.
18 years ago.
Okay.
Last week.
Were you alone?
Well, yeah, I was working the club that week.
Okay. I just met in your shoes.
Oh, yeah.
At that moment.
I was alone.
No, okay. You had your dress shoes on. Did you walk to the White Castle naked?
I don't even know. I'd take the fifth on that.
If nobody noticed,
sure.
that's a problem.
That's when you start opening your pockets and you're like looking for the receipts. Oh, hell. Oh, I can't. Oh, God. Oh.
I used to do that in town here when I would be on a bender. I could recreate the previous night by just going, okay, according to the ATM withdrawal, as a 32nd Thomas at 10:43.
Wow.
Then it was
then
a McCormick
a
Ranch at 11:12.
Wow.
That's physically. I time traveled.
Do you have a question for us?
I do have a question. And Carrie, does Carrie know about the weekly question?
Well,
we
explain that. Explain that. And last week, the question, I had tons of people coming up to me saying they were discussing that question themselves.
Really?
Yes, and it's all their answers all seem to be dependent on how old they currently are. Like older people were like, a lot of them would take the 15 years. Everybody would take the 25 years for 50.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
People under 40, no.
Here's the question. Last week's question, which, by the way, after I explain it to you and get your answer, I would like to revisit my answer. Upon further review.
Yes.
The question is, you could take your life as it is right now.
Uh-huh.
Unknown, you know, you could, who knows what's going to happen. That's the beauty of life, no crystal ball. Or you could win $100 million tax-free that's yours, and you're guaranteed 15 years to live.
Oh, from right now?
From right now. But you're not going to live a day past 15 years, but you're also not going to walk out of here tonight and get run over by the light rail, which I'm not even sure that would kill you. So you got a guaranteed 15 years and 100 mil, or status quo?
Status quo.
Yeah. She's just a young thing.
She's young.
39. I got a 5-year-old. Where am I going to go?
39.
You could have a hell of a 15-year party.
Yeah, yeah. What a 15
That 5-year-old would be taken care of for the rest of his life, too.
Yeah. I know, but I only get another. I'm dead when he's 20. That's no fun.
No.
You would like to revise your remarks?
Well, now wait.
You said
then
yes.
Then we had another little variable.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Well, it was $50 million for 25 years.
I'll take it.
See what I mean? Everyone's the same
yes,
there.
Yes, sir.
Yep.
Okay,
no one's first
said
yes on the second one.
I said I would take the $100 million in 15 years.
Yeah.
And upon further review, I threw a flag on myself and went and looked in the camera. Upon further review, I'd like to change my I'm going to decline the $100 million and just hope my wife takes the $100 million. 15 years later, boom, she's gone. I got the cash.
And you got what's left. Yeah. Good answer.
I like that. Oh, I know. I mean, I don't like that. That's terrible.
Mark,
that's
Mrs. Cordes is calling for you right now.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry about that. No, that's terrible.
All right, here's this week's question, and you're going to see that I didn't have to go far to dredge this up. Have you ever worked and I know this is kind of weird because we're all kind of self-employed. But have you ever had an employee-employer relationship that where you felt like maybe someone in the group, in the office, was maybe sleeping with the guy to get ahead, or vice versa? Let's not be sexist. It could be a young guy sleeping with a
Women prey
boss,
on the young men all the time.
Or a man sleeping with a man, or whatever. But have you ever witnessed... And I'm, of course, this is thinly veiled as a Letterman segue.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Have you ever witnessed someone sleeping the way to advancement? And so it's a two-parter. And then the other part of it is, and would you do that if there were no chance of getting caught, repercussions?
So no consequences at all?
No consequences. If you just said, hey, you know what? It's just sex. If it's going to get me ahead, I'll do that. First of all, have you ever witnessed that, been around that, kind of suspected that? And then the second part of it is, would you do it?
Who wants to start?
Let's go with the only female.
Yes.
Okay, yes.
Yes, you would do
that?
Yes, I've seen it.
Oh, okay.
Really?
She used to be in radio.
Bunch of scumbags.
Well, I slept away to
spill
the
names. Come on. Yeah.
Well, you were there too, bub.
Yeah, Steve.
You don't need any names.
I'm trying to think who.
Keep maybe, thinking.
Maybe I was stupid on
don't
that.
Don't say it.
No.
Yeah.
Right. No. Nobody needs to know. Jeez, and no. It would depend. What's the motivation is to get to the is to be like well, for advancement?
Yeah. Or just maybe it's someone that you found attractive. I guess, you know, you'd have to create that whole scenario in your head. I mean, are you Brad Pitt's personal assistant?
Yes. But, he's not cute.
Yeah, he's not?
Okay. No.
All those billions
But somebody
of women
else,
are
yeah.
He looks dirty.
So
He's dirty.
Is he?
He's dirty.
Yeah, I think you told me that before. Women think that about him.
He's actually dirty.
Dirty? What do you mean?
Like B.O. dirty.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've heard that. It's...
Yeah, it's undeniable.
That is,
have you smelled him? You sound like you have.
I did. I got very close to him in a bar in New York City, and he smelled really bad.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
What the hell's wrong with him?
Because he doesn't use deodorant or something, right?
Well, he's just...
Some people know they like to do the natural. Like I think the French roll.
Yeah, that's
that
great.
Like that.
Well, and now
great
they're
idea.
In France. I bet he really smells.
But when your wife's wearing a vial of her ex-husband's blood around her neck,
that hurts.
She's not really
B.O. is not so bad. Right.
Steve?
So recapping.
Your answer is you've seen
sure,
it?
Sure, if it was fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And there are no repercussions, so you
right,
no one's going to find out, whatever.
Steve, okay. Care about you? Yes.
No. Do I get the $100 million? In that case, yes.
Well,
he's all about the cash.
These don't carry over from week to week.
Oh, they don't. Okay.
No, there's not a...
No, I... To, sleeping your way to the top? No, I always want to get to where I'm at on my own merits.
Except for last week when you were ready to just take $100 million.
Yeah. Well, that's...
just on...
You know, cash, you know...
Well, have you seen it, though?
I guess I have.
If you missed it, it doesn't count.
Actually, I think I worked at one place where I thought there were a couple of people having a little fun on the side. You can always tell when the cute little smiles that shouldn't be the type of smiles, no words were exchanged, that type of thing. You get the vibe.
Like between Seth and Rob.
Yeah.
By the way, Rob and I worked at the Sun, so we saw it weekly.
Really?
Yeah. Any stories you guys like to tell us?
We'll give the microphones to you guys.
No names. By the way, I just to since you mentioned that, the first time in my life I watched the second half of the Mercury game. game three. And it was very entertaining. Yeah, you know, we have two players on our team who are real players. Yeah, they're great, Poindexter and Taurasi. And they should have won that game. They kind of got a weird-ass call on them when Taurasi barreled into this woman, and they called a technical on her for no real reason. But anyway, but I did have fun. And, you know, I actually thought, and this is crazy because I've never been to a Mercury game, that – if they came back here Friday, that could be kind of fun.
You would go.
I don't know.
The energy is unbelievable. And the basketball, for people that are tired of pick and roll, slam dunk every time, is really pure. I mean, just like you'd say about women's tennis. Sometimes the men's tennis is so fast, you can't appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Or men's golf is so unreal. But you go and watch the women's tour, and it's really stuff you can relate to. And it's the same with the basketball.
Yeah,
you can really, you know, they execute. They move. They can shoot it.
Well, and also a championship game in any sport.
And it would be a game five. So
this would be it. This would be it all on the line. It'd be pretty cool.
And the thing with Diana, that call, she earns that over the year
because
she treats the refs like the men do.
Right.
She MFs them the whole season.
Right, and that's what happens.
She bullies and she gets they hate her
up because they don't like
her. They all hate her.
And that was that wasn't a foul. She just had her head down and turned into the as she's running up court and crashed into this woman, and that ended up being the difference in the game. Ouch.
Oh,
1 point. Yeah. Man. So that hurt. Anyway, well, I'm going to answer that. I have seen that. I've had very few bosses, so we were not going to go through. Where this might be happening, but I'll say, yes, I have seen that. Would I do that? I can't imagine I'd ever be in that situation. No.
That's not, yeah, but that's, you got to.
Oh, let's just say I was.
Suspend that belief.
Well, it would have to be a woman. If it was a man.
Thank God.
Then, no, I would not, even for $100 million. And,
not that there's anything wrong with
if
that.
If it was a woman, yeah, sure, maybe.
Yeah.
Depends.
Well, I'm going to say I've seen it, and it's kind of creepy just because, you know, I think it takes a lot of the, like you were saying, like the little subtle little body language and the little nuanced giggles and all that, and it kind of diminishes any real accomplishments that person has because you think, you know, did they earn that or, you know. And then I'm going to come right back and say I'd probably do it.
You're in show business, Mark.
Yeah.
I'm
in show business where I'm getting screwed constantly anyway. I might as well further my career with it.
Enjoy yourself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's a good one. I like it. Okay, now let's go. For our first topic, I want to turn to Steve. Because Steve blogged on our website, grantwoods.com, and I agreed with him completely. I was Well, I'm going to start. Let me just say one thing about Obama and his Olympic situation there. I'll just throw this out there, and then I want to go to Steve to talk about the reaction to it. I am critical of Obama, not necessarily for going. I don't know what their problem is in this White House, but they really seem to not have their act together as far as understanding the game. Whatever game they're playing, they don't seem to quite get the dynamics of it, be it a particular issue, be it Congress, be it, I mean, they totally got it in the campaign. They're fantastic. But wherever they're going, they seem to not quite get it so far. And that's interesting to me. And here, the mistake was, apparently, we had no chance for this. I mean, everybody seemed to think, including the people from the United States who went over there, seemed to think that this was between Chicago and Rio, and that one of those two cities was going to get the Olympics, and it was a dead heat, and this could be the difference. If the president didn't go, he'd get blamed, and if he did go, then that could push it over. And the reality now, and I understand that a lot of really smart people didn't understand this, apparently, including people on the U.S. side. But the reality was, because of all of a whole bunch of other issues, we didn't have a chance at this thing. And You know, I was here, I was hearing Jerry Colangelo talk about this because he was over there, and they found out about it. They were on the bus on the way over to the convention center or whatever to get in the swing of things, and someone on their BlackBerry said, "Holy shit, we're out." They just voted us out. They were absolutely stunned. They turned the bus around, went back to the hotel, flew home. I mean,
yeah.
It was that ridiculous that, you know, and they got virtually no votes. They got 18 votes. I mean, so here's the thing. Was it a mistake? Yes, it was a mistake, because the president of the United States cannot put himself in that situation. I mean, you see this all the time in politics. You see it in business. You don't put yourself out there unless you have, first, generally, unless you're going to win. I mean, let's face it, most of the time, diplomatically anyway, you don't do anything. Not most of the time. 99.9% of the time, you don't do anything. It's a done deal before the president ever goes. He isn't over there trying to figure something out, you know, behind closed doors. So to get this so wrong, I think, was a huge mistake. I don't blame Obama. What's he supposed to do? He's supposed to know all the ins and outs of this? Whoever was advising him on this is one I do blame on the advisors. And I think it's to his credit that he said, okay, it's a dead heat, I'll go. It's my city, I'll go. It's good for the United States. So anyone can throw in on that. But Steve's point was the reaction, especially from the right and from a lot of high-profile Republicans, was really of glee that Obama really took it in the shorts on that one. He looked bad. Isn't this great? Rush Limbaugh, in particular, was crowing about it. And I agree. I think that we've talked about this before. This is where you step over the line into really being
hateful,
anti-American.
Because mm-hmm.
this was about the United States. It wasn't about Barack Obama.
And that was the point of the blog. I really felt the comments crossed the line and that it was un-American. This was not a Barack Obama bid. This was not a City of Chicago bid. This was the bid representing the United States of America. All of us. We're all in this together. Now, I congratulate, you know, Rio for winning it. Did a fine job, and you'll have a great time with the Olympics. But this was America that was on the world stage. It wasn't one individual or one political party or anything else. It was all of us as an American. We can be proud of the effort that we put forth. We didn't get it. I think probably in 2020 we'll get the Olympics again. It would seem like, you know, the timetable would work in our favor. But just the absolute giddiness and glee over the United States losing on the world stage was unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, it's like
the Glenn Becks, the Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah, and Rush referred to it as the worst day of his presidency. And in the blog,
please.
There was a lot worse days in
the
presidency.
It's the Olympics.
He lost a competition for a sporting event.
It's not the economy or world peace or Afghanistan.
Exactly.
It would have been a great feather. Good for you.
Yeah.
But it's not.
We didn't get it.
Hey,
we move on.
It was the same after the election. They were dying to see, how are you going to screw up the stimulus package? How are you going to screw? Wait a minute. You live here, too. I mean, last I checked.
Yeah, and if there's one thing we should all agree on is we like this country. We can disagree, but we all like this country. You know, we all want to succeed. And I thought Obama, you know, he did a very good consolatory address at the White House when he got back and put in the line that I don't recall exactly our phrase, but something like he never thinks it's, a bad thing to go across the world and, you know, promote the United States of America and what we have to offer here.
Well, I do think it's a negative, and it is a bad thing to have the President of the United States go out in such a public way and be humiliated and to lose big like that. That should not have happened. He should have been informed better so that he wouldn't have made the trip. There is no way, if you would have told him, look, you know, these guys are so pissed at the USOC. There's so many issues involved here. We don't, you know, there's no way we're going to get it. Or if we do, you know, you're going to have to personally pull this off. He wouldn't have gone. So it's a negative out there on the world stage.
Do you think that, you know, it's just like if you play golf, you've got to always weigh risk reward.
Mm-hmm.
And the risk was way too great.
As it turns out, there was no chance, I don't think.
And do you think that he was getting a lot of pressure from the Chicago side of it, not just the D.C. side of it, not just the, you know, I mean,
sure,
you know, everybody's saying, you know, Daley and all the
sure.
people that
all the
had.
People who, and he owes those people, and there's no question about that. But I think it was the right thing for him to do, given what he was told. And, you know, I mean, everybody mm-hmm. thought, including all of our people, yeah. they, I mean, not the White House people. But people who are just involved in the Olympics, they all thought we had a hell of a shot.
Yeah, it was going to be Chicago real.
Yeah, I mean, it was going to come down to that, and Tokyo had no chance.
Right,
and
I thought Tokyo would be the first out because I was watching CNN when it came down, and I heard Chicago, and it was
terrible.
No, but
now also again, what apparently it never ends because the same thing went on for 8 years with George Bush. I truly believe that a big part of the Democratic Party and certainly the activist and the liberal establishment in this country was pulling for George Bush to fail. And the number one place where I held them at fault was in Iraq. That when we went to the surge and we decided we're going to send more troops in there, and this was a McCain deal, this was a Bush deal, it was a military deal, Petraeus deal, I think they really hoped we would lose, that that would fail and that would just be the end of it and Iraq would be a 100% disaster. And as things started to turn around there and started being successful, I think those people were actually upset and disappointed that it didn't go that way. And again, in this country, all we can do is just keep talking about it, that you've got to get over that. You know,
especially when it's about people's lives. That
was very serious, and they did. I really don't think they cared. I think they were doing everything possible to try to, to try to make him look bad. Now, I think with Obama, I think any piece of economic news that they can make him look bad with, they're out there with it. They can twist anything again to make Obama look bad, and that doesn't really do the country any good. Again. Mm-hmm. You're against his health care proposal or whatever it is. Okay, so am I. You're against this. You're against that. Whatever, that's fine. Right. But you really should be hoping, I would think, that this economy of ours would be rocking and rolling here. Mm-hmm. As sooner the better. By a year from now, we'd be going, wow, we dodged a bullet there and things are really going great. That in foreign affairs, no. Iran doesn't get nuclear capability, that Pakistan doesn't blow up, that Afghanistan stabilizes, that whatever, go right down the line here of all these issues. That's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're looking at it partisan-wise, you say, well, the worse things get, the more chance the Republicans mm-hmm. will have of doing better a year from now in the midterm elections, mm-hmm. of having someone defeat Obama in 2012. It's just not it's not right, so I don't know. So I appreciated your blog, very timely.
Thank you. So. It just bothered me that people were giddy that the United States lost. We're Americans.
Well, not to belabor Grant's point, but and not to do a moral equivalency here, but mm-hmm. let's go back. Let's say that this was Bush in the White House, and he decides he's going to do something that no president's ever done. He's going to hop on a jet and fly over there trying to get the Olympics for Dallas, and Jerry Jones is going to go with him.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, and they're going to close the deal because no one's going to say no to George Bush
and
Jerry Jones.
Right.
And they didn't get it.
They would have gone insane on the same people.
That's
it. The roles would have been reversed. And that's why you can't listen to these people.
Right.
You got to turn MSNBC off and you got to turn Fox off. I'm sorry.
Well, that's why we're CNN for news.
Yeah.
I think it cuts things.
It's as middle of the road as you can
get. It's as middle of the road
as
you can get.
That's
it's,
right.
it's.
You know, 4 years ago, New York was in the running for the Olympics. They were the American city bid. And at the time, President Bush did not go to wherever the bidding was, but he did a video.
Right.
He invited the Olympic Committee to the White House. He did everything he could to support the bid. It was clear at that point, the United States was going to be an alteran because Atlanta had only been 9 years earlier, so there was no way they were going to do it. But what you do, and Rio did this in the past months, you build that relationship, and sure enough, you get it. And as I mentioned in the blog, I think 2020, North America will be selected, and I would
face it, those carnival dancers looked a lot better in their little get-ups than Michelle and Oprah did. And I think really that's what all
that's do. Probably what killed us.
You know how bad that was, though, that we got just smoked out in the first round? That looks so bad. And then the fact that they took Rio, because if you take Chicago, it's money in the bank. I mean, look, that's the prudent thing for the International Olympic Committee to take Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Forget I mean, forget which country or whatever. This is money in the bank. You're going to do well. It's all going to go smoothly. You're going to everything will work. Rio, that's all on the come.
Could be a disaster.
Oh, that could be a big disaster because if you look at all the stuff they have to do, we'll see. Yeah. Good luck.
Should it matter that Chicago was 50-50 on whether or not they wanted it?
Yeah, I think so. I think that hurts Chicago's bid. Yeah.
And should it also, you know, everybody's blaming.
Absolutely.
I love today people are coming out and blaming George Bush for not getting the Olympics.
Now, why would he be to blame for this?
Thank you. But there were people saying that.
No, Bush supported this effort when he was president when Chicago was elected.
But meanwhile, on the World Wide Web, you can watch videos of gangs in Chicago killing kids with 2x4s.
And
that doesn't help.
No, that probably played a role in it.
Well, yeah, mm-hmm. You think?
I would certainly think so.
Or the fact that all those slumlords were going to make gazillions of dollars by knocking down
I don't think any of that mattered in the end, honestly. Chicago didn't want it.
That stuff happened.
They had all their – well, yeah, Rio, that's a real safe place. They got their act together.
I'm sure that crime in Rio is a lot cleaner and safer.
I mean, there'll be a lot of choices down there for the visitors, let's put it that way.
I just don't see Olympic Village built at the corner of drive-by and crack pipe.
you may see it this time in Rio.
Exactly.
I mean, it's allegedly pretty wild down there. Okay. I just want to mention this because we haven't mentioned it. I don't remember where I read this, but it was a couple months ago, and now I'm thinking it seems to be holding true. Someone said Obama's 9/11 is going to be unemployment. And they use the term 9/11 to mean it's that it may be stuck for a long time between 9 and 11, and that those numbers seem to be plaguing the United States, and that it's not going to go below 9, and it could go up to 11. It probably won't go over that, but it's going to be somewhere in that throughout his presidency. I hope not.
God.
But when I heard that, I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. 9/11, those same numbers again that plagued us before. And I don't know. I mean, every month's numbers since I heard that have not really – we keep getting surprised a little bit that it's –
all right, it's around, 9.5 right now, 9.5?
9.8.
Yeah, so that was interesting. So I just throw that out there that 9/11 – the new 9/11 may be numbers.
I don't know that I'd use the comparison.
Well, it's numbers.
I mean, it's interesting with the number comparison, but 9/11 is kind of like an entity.
Well, I'm not
all
saying
by
politically.
Itself.
I'm just saying practically speaking, if it stays between 9 and 11, that could be his.
That's a problem. There's no doubt about it.
Problem there, and it may.
Well, and like.
Those are fairly inaccurate, by the way, also, because the problem's much worse than that.
Well, and a lot of people looking back at President Bush's presidency, they think that he made himself based on his reaction to the terror attacks. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like the test, and how do you respond, and what do you do, and what do you say? And
right.
I mean, I remember his statements in those post-9/11 days so vividly. I mean, I think everybody does, you know, because he stood up and he said all the right things and he went down to the
after
the megaphone.
After that first speech. That first speech is so weak.
Oh, yeah.
He looked like a scared little kid reading off the teleprompter.
Bush. He threw a strike at Yankee Stadium, though.
Obama's a bowler.
No, he's not.
Well, when he pitches.
He's a hoopster.
Yeah.
That was an ugly first pitch.
I know.
That doesn't matter.
No, you're
jeans
right.
Jeans were really bad.
Let me ask you that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But when he wore a cut, but that was genius what he did when he wore the Cubs jersey, Cubs jacket to St. Louis. Do you know what the theory is why he did that? Because that explained away any booze he would get.
Oh, good. Brilliant.
Pretty smart.
Yeah, because you hate to get booed, but they do.
But oh, God.
Yeah,
and then
that.
They could say,
you know
why? Because he wore a Cubs jacket.
If you're a politician, if you're a politician getting introduced at a sporting event, I had to go through this. I was like, please don't do it. Please don't do it. And twice I was introduced at Suns games. Once, I married a couple at center court at halftime. I don't know if you recall that.
Yeah, it was like the 2-minute wedding.
Yeah, these people all tried to get, at least couples, they got some big package, wedding package, and the gorilla was the ring bearer.
Oh,
it's great.
Remember that?
Yeah, I was the judge, and So that time and another time, for some reason, they introduced me, and I was pretty much met with indifference. Which crowd was going to get their coats?
That's a winner.
No, I was thrilled.
Is that worse than being booed?
No, it's great. Oh, I've heard awesome. Some of the – well, the most famous was Ev Meekum in the middle of his 1 year in office.
Yeah, why go?
The loudest booing in the history maybe of sports was for that. And then afterwards he said he didn't hear it at Sun Devil Stadium. It's a classic. Classic.
1,000 people booing.
Hey, I want to do this Woody here because it also goes into a Supreme Court question. So let's do that if we can. Since we're picking.
Come Steve never gets to hold the Woody.
That's correct.
That's what she said.
Danny got to hold it last week. That's the chair for the Woody.
Oh,
it's the
Woody chair.
It wasn't the same.
I bet he was holding it.
You might want to Febreze that.
Shoot.
Scotch guard it and Febreze it.
Please
later.
Do. But do you notice how sad Woody was last week?
Yeah. Look how happy he is.
He's much happier. Look at him. He's feeling much better, and I can see why. Okay. The Woody this week goes to the Hollywood supporters of Roman Polanski. Ever since the arrest of Roman Polanski in Switzerland last week, a faction of Hollywood has stepped forward to minimize his crimes and demand his release. These people are either uninformed or totally deluded by what passes for right or wrong among celebrities. Roman Polanski was a sick, dangerous pedophile who skipped the country when he heard he might actually be punished. It's time that the piper pays. Whoopi Goldberg said, sorry about that, on The View, Steve... Whoopi Goldberg said, well, it wasn't really, quote, rape, whatever that means. Deborah Winger says the case was dead except for a technicality. That little technicality apparently being the sentencing and serving your time part. Directors, actors, pseudo-intellectuals all said that this was a case that was not worth revisiting. Woody Allen even stepped forward as a character reference along with his adopted daughter slash wife. A few facts that seem to get in the way. Polanski had a history of having sex with underage girls under 15. This girl was 13 and was taken from her parents under the guise that he was simply going to take some photos to help the girl in her acting career. In his mid-40s, he talked the girl into drinking champagne despite her protests that when she had tried it before, it had triggered an asthma attack. When another asthma attack ensued and she was having trouble breathing, he gave her a pill to calm her down. The pill was a Quaalude. With her now properly ill and drugged, he violently raped her and sodomized her. Then he took her home and dropped her off at her parents' front door. Now, I have long advocated life in prison without parole for deviants like Roman Polanski. Had this happened, we would have been deprived of several great movies. But I'm sure there are many other little girls now suffering grown women who would have had a better childhood and a better life had Polanski been put in a cage where he belongs. He is an artist, yes, but he is a pervert as well and a dangerous one. And if the judge and the prosecutors have the guts to show that the undue influence and corruption Polanski showed us in Chinatown are no longer what controls L.A., then justice will prevail and he will finally pay for his crime. His Hollywood supporters will be crushed by this, but the rest of America will cheer. That's why his supporters get the Woody.
Very good. Ta-da. You're here.
It's very righteous, Woody.
It wasn't rape. It wasn't like rape light.
It wasn't rape.
It wasn't rape.
13-year-old, drugged.
She was screaming no, but you could tell.
She kind of wanted it.
Yeah.
No.
She would have been out if she didn't.
She was having a friggin' asthma attack in the middle. I mean, it's unbelievable. And these people are actually like, it's not that big a deal. And, you know, the controversy about it, you know, this documentary came out. The controversy was his attorney had been told that what was going to happen was he was going to get time served, which is 42 days or something like that. And the day before, word got back to him that the judge was going around bragging to people, hey, wait till this dude comes in. He's going to be shocked because I'm going to sock it to him. And so Polanski went, got to go, and split. Okay. That was the big controversy. And the prosecutor and the judge were talking and doing things they shouldn't have done, stuff like that. Here's the bottom line, though. He confessed. He confessed the whole thing. He entered a plea. So whatever the judge was doing or not doing, fine. You know, bring him back, resentence him with somebody who can look at the facts.
Is that little technicality?
That little technicality, yeah.
Yeah.
They act like this trial never happened.
The fact that he pled.
Oh, Deborah Winger said, yeah. Hey, this is no case. There's just some little technicality left.
Deborah, it's a problem.
Yeah, that's a big problem, I would think.
A buddy of mine from high school is married to her.
What?
To Deborah Winger?
To Deborah Winger, yeah.
Really?
No kidding. He's an actor, Arliss Howard.
Oh, yeah. He's a real left winger.
Oh, he's a. No, you know who he is?
Should have left winger.
No, do you know who he is?
He's a good what's actor. His name?
Arliss Howard.
No.
He's been in a million movies. You'd know him if you saw him. He was in Men Don't Leave. Did you ever see that? With Jessica Lange?
Yeah, I missed that. Sounded good, though.
He left. Grant left.
He's with
anything else?
I was going to go see it. I had
no,
to go.
But the point is, he's a...
Is he all right, or is he a left winger?
Yeah, he's a
Pinko.
He's a wingnut.
Commie.
He is.
Yeah. So it doesn't surprise me that...
Well, let's go to the flip side of that, because the Supreme Court is looking at this as we speak, the U.S. Supreme Court. And that is the question that... I think there's two cases they're looking at, but let's just focus on one. Male breaks into an old woman's house. She's like 80 or whatever she is. She's old. And breaks in, robs her, and rapes her, and kind of leaves her there, laying there for dead or for whatever. She didn't die, but he's convicted of... rape and armed robbery or robbery, burglary, the whole bit. The problem is he's 13 when he does this. So he was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. So that's one case. Another case that they're looking at the same time is same thing, terrible crime being committed, not murder, but something less than murder. 16-year-old does something like that. And so... a few years ago, the Supreme Court had a case where they looked at can you execute someone who was underage when they committed the crime, meaning under the age of 18? And they decided, no, you can't. And their theory on that was, well, you can't have such an extreme punishment for a crime, no matter how bad the crime is, for someone who's under 18, because you know because they're kids.
Your brain isn't fully formed.
They're still changing. They're doing all that sort of stuff. So now if you can't execute them, the question is, can you lock them up without the possibility of parole? And does it matter whether he's 13 or whether he's 16? Is it just under 18? And so, what do you think?
It seems to
I think I can tell you how the case is going to turn out, but what do you guys think?
If you just have a hard and fast 18-year deal, then aren't you telling kids that are 17 years and 300 days old, you better get your yayas out in the next 2 months?
Yeah, anything goes.
If they're smart enough to figure that out, which most of these guys aren't.
Well, true. But
they don't think that through. There's no question. Deterrence on these guys is... didn't really work. Let's just start with the harder case, the 13-year-old who commits that crime. That's about as heinous a crime as you can get.
Absolutely.
13, though, my God. Mm-hmm. That's really young. Mm-hmm. And he might be a... I'd like
His
to give
life
him time to figure
up.
It out. I'd like to give him time to figure it out at 13.
So you give him a chance for parole at some point in his life?
Yeah, I would. 13's young. But it's like we had... the debate here in Arizona, the 16 and 17-year-olds being tried as adults as opposed to the 13 and 14-year-olds. And your argument was, 13 and 14, you can't presume that they are. But depending upon the crime, 16 and 17, yes, you can.
That was my position back then. The question carries exactly right. That was, the issue was if we have 16, 17-year-olds who are committing adult crimes, serious adult crimes, again, violent crimes, should we have them automatically transferred, or should at least the presumption be that they're going to be tried as an adult rather than as a juvenile when they're that old and they commit these violent crimes? And my position on that was, yes, we should. If you're going to act like an adult in that fashion, I don't have any problem treating you as an adult there. 15 and under, no. I think we ought to, again, you're not saying no. In that situation, you're saying, let's have a little discretion. Sometimes maybe you will try to, you take it to the judge. That's why you have judges. And you may say, hey, this kid is a complete jerk. By the way, this 13-year-old, he had a record like you've never seen
already. Oh, I would think
already.
So.
He had done everything imaginable except kill somebody already. So he is like the poster child. He's as bad as you can get for a 13-year-old. But I would say at 13, that probably does violate the Constitution to say life without parole at that point. But I'm not so sure about 16. So I don't know what they're going to do. Yeah. I'm confident they're going to say at 13, no.
That's too young.
Yeah. That's too young.
That other kid, the older kid, I was reading about that case, though. It was a violent crime, but it wasn't against a person. It was like an armed robbery or something. Like, he didn't physically hurt the person. And then he was out on parole and committed another basically very similar
crime.
Right,
and the judge said, you know what? We've done all we can do for you. We need to lock you up. As I said with Polanski, I love the concept of life without parole. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people think that's very barbaric. It's very funny. When I go back east to the AG meetings and everything, they would think I was like moderate right. And then I would come back to Arizona and I was like, you know,
right.
Mao Zedong. So, but some of the things that appall people on the left are these sort of views that I have and that what I just said, I'd have no problem with life without parole for some people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one issue that I've kind of evolved on, if you will, for lack of a better phrase, is the death penalty. Mm-hmm. And at one point I supported it. If we're on the ballot today, I would vote to get rid of it. Mm-hmm. And my reasoning behind that is, yes, I agree, it's an appropriate punishment for certain crimes. The problem that I have with it is that as you've looked at the death penalty cases across the country and the DNA evidence, I can't sit here and tell you honestly that everybody who's been executed in this country over the last 20 years was guilty. Mm-hmm. And I think there are some cases where there are some serious questions.
Sure.
That is one punishment that you can't recover from. If you lock somebody up for 20 years and they're innocent, you can release them, you can give them financial compensation, whatever, to try and make it right. If you execute somebody and it turns out they didn't do it, that's a problem. The other thing is, too, Grant, is I don't see the death penalty being, you know, administered equally, if you will. For example, here in Arizona, and this happened when you were Attorney General, and I'm not saying you had anything to do with it, but the worst mass murder in the state of Arizona was the Buddhist Temple Massacre, where the nine people got murdered. Mm-hmm. Those two guys are doing, I think, 270 years in life. They were not executed. Well, if you're not going to execute somebody for the worst mass murder in the state, how can you then say, well, you killed one person, but that was pretty
bad.
Well,
because ultimately, I mean, now in Arizona and around the country, it's decided by juries. Mm-hmm. Sentencing is done by juries as well, and so, you know, they're going to look at things differently.
Right.
I could solve that problem for you, and that is just execute them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all for executing those guys.
But, you know, you and I did a show down in Death Row years ago.
Don't put it that way.
No,
it sounds terrible.
We did a show.
And the star of the show made a brief appearance.
But you know what?
Wasn't there for the second act.
In a lot of ways, after going in there and seeing what they have to live in for the rest of their lives, that is punishment.
There's no doubt. Death Row in Arizona, anyway. I've never been to another death row. It's not good.
Without even being executing, without executing them, that is punishment.
You remember when I had to walk around, I had to visit all these prisons when I was going to argue this prison case at the U.S. Supreme Court, and I did walk by Death Row, and we did execute a heck of a lot of people, while I was AG, and really none previously for 30 years and hardly anyone since. But so consequently, it was a pretty hot issue, and my name ID was up on Death Row. They knew who I was.
Popular.
Yes. Not popular, though.
Well, different definitions of popular.
There were some real weirdos there, and they were all screaming and yelling. It was just like, why don't we go to another part of the old prison?
You feel like Clarice going to see me.
Exactly. No, you're right. Steve's right. I think any prison is gross, and it's big-time punishment. And certainly, you know, there's an argument to be made that that saying you're going to be in there for your entire life, no chance to ever get out, that's a good enough punishment. I understand it. It's like other controversial issues. I'm pro-death penalty. But what I don't understand about this or abortion, I'm pro-choice. I don't understand people can't see the other side. Mm-hmm. I fully admit on these things, I have my own view, and I've thought it through. I may change my mind someday. Yeah. I haven't yet. But I also admit I might be wrong. Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
All you can do is
if there's good arguments on both sides of these things.
You and I could disagree on this, but we can have an honest, you know, intelligent discussion from your viewpoints. And I do, you know, like say at one point I was fully in support of it. Now I've kind of reexamined
it. You wimped out now.
But you can respect my opinion. I can respect yours. And that's what makes
you become a wuss.
So on the DNA thing, if DNA does prove that somebody without a doubt did it, then you're fine with offing them?
Uh, I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good question because I do DNA evidence. No one should be executed anymore unless the whole DNA thing has been checked. That isn't now going forward, so we can solve that.
You know, the one case that really changed it for me, and maybe I've been thinking about it before, but Ray Krohn, having met him. Mm-hmm. Ray Krohn was convicted not once but twice of a murder that he didn't do.
Right.
And he spent, I think, a total of 11 years in prison, like 9.5 on death row. Right. And it was clear he did it.
Well, the system's not going to be perfect. So if you want a perfect system, and there is an argument to be said, hey, don't execute somebody in case we figure out later they made a mistake, then you can undo it. Mm-hmm. I understand that argument.
Well, DNA
system's not going to be perfect.
Though. DNA evidence excludes you more than it includes you. I mean, just because you – I mean
– My view is the system worked with Krohn.
It did, but what if we had executed him? Because a lot of people.
But we didn't.
No, I know, but I'm just saying.
It worked.
A lot of people are saying, "Hey, once they're done, speed it up. Let's get it on."
Yeah,
I say
it's.
You know, they had the bite marks to prove he did it, except he didn't.
Yeah, I understand that, but my point on him is system worked.
Mm-hmm. Okay, here's my theory, and it's not real popular because I've just now started to get it out there, but I think you'll agree with me. I think that not only should you kill the guy if you prove, but kill his best friend too. Because in that way, you have a lot of crimes that won't happen because the best friend will be like, what the hell?
There's your deterrent.
What are you doing?
That might work.
Though you can't break into that lady's house.
Right.
Jesus.
They're going to get me, too.
Yeah. They're going to gas
me. It's not a bad theory.
Don't tase me, bro.
I would rather go that way, that direction.
You can't hardly go wrong with that. I think that's
okay. Cool. I have just two or three more quick subjects here. We're just going to knock them off the list here. This came out with a list. I read today, actually, the 50 most intellectual or 50 most intelligent cities are actually, they rated 50 cities. And as far as just people are in those cities are smart. And at the top were like Boston, New York, Austin, Portland, these sort of places. Phoenix was bottom five. I think we were 45th or something like that. What do you think about that? Is that accurate?
I can back that up. Look at how many millions of people went to a Diamondbacks game this year.
Hey, easy.
Wow.
Easy.
Kazang.
By the way, the Cardinals are coming off a bye week. Diamondbacks had a bye season.
Oh, God.
Sorry. Mercury had a bye season. Well, oh, that's a whole different issue. Sorry.
No, I mean the cities that are at
the eye.
Oh, that's right.
The cities are at the top. I would expect to be at the top. I would assume I have not seen the list, and I'll use a prejudicial statement here. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming there aren't many cities in the deep south on that list in the top.
I don't think they were even rated. No, you know what? One of them at the, near the top.
Might be,
Charlotte. Charlotte was
Charlotte,
near the top.
Okay, that one I can see.
They were near the top.
Okay.
Yeah.
A lot of them are places like Seattle, though, where you're.
Oh, Seattle was on the list at the top.
Of course, because there's nothing
else to do is your point?
Well, I mean...
No, it's grim there.
You ever go to Seattle?
Yeah,
people,
it's horrible.
They always go, man, a lot of people read in Seattle. Yeah, no crap.
It's raining.
Yeah, there's nothing to do there. Yeah.
I would think San
it's
Francisco's
a gorgeous
on the
city.
List.
San Francisco's on there.
Yeah.
But you know, at the bottom with us is Vegas.
That's necessarily surprising.
It doesn't surprise me, no. I mean, I've never seen a lot of intellectual firepower there.
I think we have a
since
lot of...
Kreskin retired. Fresno came in last.
I've been to Fresno before.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. What's going on in Fresno? Nothing?
I got a friend that lives up there.
Doesn't seem like much.
A lot like what's going on here. Everyone's outside.
Well,
nobody could answer their phone to take the poll because everyone was outside at the park.
Well, I don't know. It's not good to be on there. And then the other thing is I just have to mention that I don't know how many people saw the Curb Your Enthusiasm. You haven't seen it yet?
I don't have HBO.
Oh, my God.
T-Bud.
Seinfeld. It was the first episode now with the Seinfeld game back. And it is absolutely...
Is it?
It's a masterpiece. It's a masterpiece of just how they pulled this off because it is so odd. I mean, just think about the actors. I mean, the actors, let's take the four main actors from Seinfeld. They have to play... It's a real challenge for them. They're playing themselves as imagined by Larry David, playing their characters on Seinfeld, and then not playing their characters and being a person that they imagine he imagines them to be. So it's really bizarre. But it's the one way, and this is the whole point that they keep talking about on there, and this is going to be a running theme for the next 6 weeks or so. It's the one way they could do a reunion show because it is a reunion show. It's part of, as Jerry Seinfeld's saying now, this is now part of Seinfeld. You can't just say it's those years. It is now those years plus this show. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's a tremendous way to do it, though. It's just very cool. And their conversations, like, you know, when he last night's show, or you can see this week on HBO, you know, he has to go talk to all the cast members about a reunion show. And, of course, he has an ulterior motive why he's even doing it. It has nothing to do with Seinfeld and all that. But, of course, immediately go, why would we do that? That's lame. There's never been a good reunion show. Right. They suck. And then someone did mention, yeah, and that'll kind of make up for that, you know, our finale. Wait a minute, our finale was great. No, that was great. That has nothing to do with it, you know. Anyway, very funny.
That's going to be tough, though, for, like, Michael Richards. He doesn't know whether to be a racist or not.
Rough.
You know, that last episode I've watched a few times since then. It's not as bad as I thought it was. I think that's one where the expectations were so high.
I agree with that.
But it's not bad.
And it's not
bad. You got to end it. How do you end it?
Well, it just didn't work. They should have done it.
But Larry David has said the only issue he had with that finale was he wouldn't have made him so glib when they witnessed the crime. He wouldn't have made it so nonchalant.
It made him unlikable all of a sudden.
Yeah, but other than that, I mean, he stands by it.
Yeah, I agree with Steve. I think the expectations were so high. Every one of them have been great. Yeah. And I just want to say one little phrase that I like, because I was reading some reviews of the Curb show, and it was a rave review, and then underneath was all the people blogging, and about 10 in a row set where this is fantastic. I loved it, man. I'm in heaven. This is so great. And then some guy wrote in, I hate Seinfeld. I really hate Jerry Seinfeld. So I hated watching this. And and the next guy writes in, who was forcing you to watch this? And why would you get on a blog with people who obviously love the show and really enjoy it and try to crap on the whole thing? And then the line I like goes, you must be a sad little monkey.
Wow.
Is that a great line?
Wow.
You must be a sad little monkey.
That's
and
great.
I think that guy was a sad little monkey.
Well put.
To do that.
Had to be.
Okay, last thing in entertainment I'm going to throw out there. I know there won't be five people who will ever figure this out, but we stumbled on a movie at the thank God for Dan Harkins in this town, because if it wasn't for Harkins, I don't know. I mean,
he's intellectual.
He's fantastic. I mean, and because of Harkins, they have a place to have the Scottsdale Film Festival. And I have this, as you know, this Italian thing that something about that country has permeated my adult life. And so we go to see this other movie over there at Camelview, and the whole film festival's going on. Well, I didn't even remember that it was going on. And this movie was sold out that we were going to go to, which is kind of shocking, because I didn't think anyone had ever even heard of it. So we said, oh, we're screwed now. Now you're there. It's the time. Oh, you know, if you've ever been shut out on a movie, you're really screwed.
Yeah.
You know, or you can go see the other crap that's showing. Well, oh, film festival, what's showing? Is there? And they said, mid-August lunch. I said, okay, mid-August lunch. Okay, I looked at the plot. Yeah, okay. Is there a ticket? Yeah, there's a few tickets left. It was actually packed. It was such a great little movie, and it's an Italian movie.
Perfect.
And it's set in Rome. But if you have a chance ever to see Mid-August Lunch, the plot is very simple, but it's a guy probably 60, maybe late 50s, something like that, and he cares for his mom in their little apartment in Rome, and his mother is 93. Okay, she's really old, but pretty frisky. It starts with him reading to her, and he's reading the Three Musketeers to her, and she's really into it. And describe that musketeer again. I like him. And anyway, he's behind on his rent, and so the landlord comes and says, "Hey, well, okay, I got a deal here. This holiday coming up, it would really be helpful to me if you could take my mom in." And, you know, if she could just stay with you for the week of just two days or whatever, it'd be great. He doesn't want to do it. I don't know. That sounds bad. Don't have much room. Come on. So he does it. Guy shows up, his 80-year-old, 80-plus, and his 80-plus aunt. Now there's three old ladies he's going to have to take care of for the weekend. And then his doctor comes by because he's got these pains, and his doctor goes, he gets a free visit. He says, you got to do me a favor. I got my mom. I got to go. So he ends up with four, 80-plus old ladies in the house for the weekend. And that's the story. That's it. And it's just really, really underplayed and great. And it just shows you how I think they shot it for like 500 euro, something like that. It doesn't have to be the big Hollywood blockbuster.
Right.
It just showed you how great film can be. None of the actors other than the lead, who is also the director and the writer, were actors.
It's great.
Like all the old ladies?
Mm-hmm. They're just old ladies.
Yeah. Got two of them from a home.
Was it in English or subtitles?
Subtitle. And we said that afterwards when we were talking about it. I said, those women were so good, I think maybe they weren't actors. They were, because they just, there was no acting. Either they're geniuses or they weren't acting. Turns out they weren't acting. Anyway, I just throw that out there because, one, we ought to, you know, and I was guilty too because this is by happenstance, but we ought to support, you know, things like Scottsdale Film Festival and things like that, because that's what moves us up this list, you know, past Fresno. And you know what? You never have. I just thought it was a great time.
Yeah. Well, Camelview is great because they bring in the limited release movies that you hear about that play in New York and in Chicago and San Francisco and L.A. and stuff like that.
What if Camelview went away?
Oh, my God. Please don't. That's where I go all the time.
Yeah, I know. I mean, they have the greatest movies.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Have you seen this White Star? I think that's the name of it.
No.
Keats Love Affair. It's supposed to, I don't know. That's where we went to. Sold out. I'm like, what?
Is it still there?
I thought there would be like three people there. Oh, yeah.
All right.
It's doing well. I don't know. I can't vouch for it because I didn't see it.
Still haven't seen it.
And this, I have no idea where you'll ever see Mid-August Lunch.
Right. Because
that was one showing, one time. We lucked out to see it.
Oh, isn't that cool? Well, it's so like you and about 100 people know what you're talking about.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
That's
Check
great.
It out. Check
no,
it out
great.
Somehow.
Go to Netflix in a couple of months.
Go find it. Yeah, Netflix. That's where you can find it and support them anyway. All right. And, you know, a friend of mine who I actually have written a script with, where he's going to come down here at some point in time. I don't remember when, but David Lewis, he has written a play which is about ready to open in a few weeks about Benjamin Franklin. He plays Benjamin Franklin, and he wrote it. He's a big director around town of plays. When is it? In November? Is that when he's going to come? Okay, so we're going to have him come in November, and something to look forward to.
Not to be confused with Richard Lewis from Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Do you know anything about Richard Lewis?
Oh, my God. Because
I love that guy.
I've worked with him a couple times.
How was he?
He's psychotic.
Yeah,
psychotic. You kind of think so.
Yeah,
and that's not even an act.
Oh,
that's just how he is.
It can't be.
I worked with him in Tempe about 5 years ago. Last minute, I got called in to do the 30-minute spot before him.
Mm-hmm.
And the first night, I wasn't really thinking about it, and I ended up doing this joke that I shouldn't have done before him. It's a great joke, but it talks about blowjobs. You know, there's no such thing as a bad blowjob.
Or a bad blowjob.
He had a hissy fit. Called me up to his office after the show, and I wanted to have me fired if I didn't agree to not do that joke anymore. I said, Richard, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done it. I was just kind of in the moment.
Well, I don't get that. Why? Why?
Because
those were his?
Too big a laugh. Once you've broken down that barrier, there's nothing for me to go. There's nowhere to go
past
that.
Yeah, I got it.
And on and on, and it was like, dude, you know, you've been doing this for
100
years.
Yeah.
You should be able to. I never ask the comedians that go up before me to censor anything out of their act. Because my thought is, if I'm closing the show, I ought to be strong enough to.
But people do that?
If they juggle flaming poodles, I ought to be able to pull something.
But people do that, apparently.
Not that many, but he just.
They want it kind of flat and.
Yeah.
Don't be funnier. Don't be more colorful than me.
He just was. He's a physical wreck.
Yeah.
He's like.
I saw him in like.
Almost 70.
I saw him a couple years ago at the Improv in August, and he was in his all black.
Oh, yeah. Every night.
And he looked like he was melted. He'd been out there walking around in the parking lot and was melted.
Yeah, there's a little green room upstairs at the Tempe Improv, and he was shuffling around up there in slippers before he put on his black. Slip on.
That doesn't sound good.
He looks like a little old man that you've got to wake up to go to.
Really?
Oh, yeah, and he's real frail, and he kind of shakes your hand. And he comes saying, don't get me wrong, I think you're funny. He was going through this whole thing, but just not that.
This picture.
Not
I love that joke.
Anything but the blowjob joke.
Not that joke. And don't. And I said, you know what? You're right. I shouldn't have done it. I said, you know, it just kind of was a thing I was doing at that. Mm-hmm. Just kind of followed the joke I told before that. I should have ended on the joke before that. But he just was having a hissy fit. But he's But he's a freak.
Really?
Why?
Yeah. Yeah,
I just watched Meet the Blacks, that episode on the way to Maui. I downloaded all the Larry David's favorite Curbs just for the, and I watched Meet the Blacks, and that's the one where he's going out with what's her name, Cha-Cha or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
Larry says he'd like to do Cha-Cha, and that's it. He's out on the couch. So he has to let the Blacks in. And I just, so Richard's on the mind. God,
Richard Lewis is
damn,
hysterical.
He's funny.
Yeah.
You know what's weird, though? His humor is really, you could follow him around the country and see him do the identical set, and depending on where he is,
kills or not.
And Tempe's a not.
Yeah, I bet he kills in
New York.
Yeah,
East Coast.
East Coast.
You know,
and
what's
LA
the Jewish
probably.
Population of
yeah,
Tempe
exactly.
Improv.
Five.
One.
You know, I mean, well, they all come to see him.
Yeah.
And it's five.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they just don't get a lot of the, you know, and a lot of that angst and a lot of that.
I love it.
But, you know, here it's kind of like, this guy needs meds.
Yeah.
You know, where in New York, they're all like, that sounds like my family.
Yeah, right. That's hilarious.
But, you know, I mean, he kills in Boston, not so much in Orlando. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Plus, he was going off on some jag because Ohio State, which is where he went.
He went to Ohio State?
Yeah, he's a big Buckeye fan.
What? And I never would have guessed that.
Yeah.
I think I'd heard that before.
Steve doesn't like him anymore.
Yeah.
And he had a big supporter, and they had just done something bad had happened to them, and he kept bringing it up every night. Like,
oh, really?
At the improv talking about it. People are like, you know,
dude,
that's.
Nobody cares.
Don't really care, and we paid $30. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is the funny.
Move on.
Yeah.
Should we wrap it up?
Yeah.
Thanks to everybody at Marley's.
Letterman.
Oh, letter.
I mean, we don't have to, but
no.
Well, there'll be more material because he talks about it tonight on the show.
Oh, he does.
He
apologizes
to his wife.
Tonight.
Yeah. Oh, he does.
And
you know what? I hate that. I hate that.
What? What do you hate?
Him apologizing to his wife on the show.
Yeah, I know. Do it in person.
You know what? Yeah, that's totally disingenuous. And by the way, what about last Thursday? Okay, so you're late, and now you're using your show. What a jackass! I'd be like, yeah.
And by the way, he apologized to. Say,
Sarah Palin?
Spitzer's wife. I don't know why that.
What about that South Carolina governor?
He makes all those jokes, though, that he did. And, you know, hey, I don't really care.
He supposedly puts in a Sarah Palin type apology tonight, too. I read a little bit of the transcript on it before.
But he apologizes to her?
To her?
There's some reference to Sarah Palin. They didn't release the transcript, but there's some reference to the jokes that he was making. And so I think it's kind of an apology. And he apparently winds it throughout the whole show tonight.
I heard that during the seventh inning stretch, he knocked up A-Rod. Am I getting this wrong?
No, that's the show.
And I also heard that he's renaming his show Worldwide Unzipped Pants. That's just another thing.
He ought to do that. All right. Okay. I think that's a show.
That's a show.
You know, he's catching a lot of heat about this.
Yeah, he really
he
is.
Get it. What did he? He wasn't even married.
No, he wasn't married then. They don't point that out. So why is he apologizing to his wife?
He didn't have a kid.
Sexual harassment.
Yeah, but he's also rising.
Yeah.
What
is
this talking
about?
And he's
they
also,
work for him.
And he's also been with this woman for 20
sexual.
Years.
Yeah, not so much.
But I've been with this woman that's known his wife for 20 years.
I don't know. Everyone in the comedic world always thought that was a front anyway.
What was?
Hit that girlfriend he had for 20 years.
Meryl Marco?
Yeah.
Is that who his wife is? No.
No, that's who his girlfriend was.
No, I know.
He wasn't with this girlfriend.
No, he was with Meryl Marco.
Yeah. It was a big fraud.
No, but from a legal standpoint, there is a sexual harassment thing. You know,
well, it's probably Meryl.
Sexual harassment, not if it's too sensitive.
Can't be. It's probably Meryl.
And there's also, it's just making, and I think he talks about this tonight, it's also making the people that he... the other women that he's been working for uncomfortable because now everybody's saying, well, are you one of the ones?
Yeah.
If you worked with Letterman, you know, now you kind of feel like, I just hope he was doing the slow chick that made